Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The owner's the biggest choke point. The founder, the CEO, is always the biggest, the bottleneck. It's a hard pill for CEOs and founders to swallow because they think they're the reason and they're not. They're the hurdle. And I never knew that.
This can't be it. There has to be more. Wait, am I crazy? No. If you're yearning for more and working hard to make your dreams a reality, then you're in the right place. Welcome to Dreamcatchers. It's the only show committed to helping you self-actualize and then transcend, leaving you with the legacy you've always desired. Listen in on conversations with successful philanthropists, entrepreneurs, and founders every week as we connect with them for inspiration, education, and direction. Your host, Jerome Myers, is here to help you exit the matrix and transform into a leader of your own revolution. The question is, do you believe your dreams should be real? Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Dreamcatchers podcast. I'm your host, Jerome, and you all are in for a treat. I know I say that a lot of times, but this one, I want you to get your notepad out. I want you to find a quiet place where you're not going to be interrupted, because whether you're on the path to an eight-figure exit, or you're just starting that journey, or you're already out and you're asking yourself some questions that you're scared to ask other people, I think this episode is going to be tremendously impactful for you. I've been scouring the internet looking for guests, as I always do, and I have found somebody who I think has a very different perspective on the way that value is extracted from businesses and the person who is impacted when that value is extracted. And so with that, I would love to welcome my man, Rick Martinez, into the show. Rick, how are you, man?
Hey, Jerome. I'm doing great today. I just share with you what a beautiful day we're having here in Texas. And I'm doing good and so excited to be here. Thank you.
I'm so glad that you decided to come hang out with us. It was really cool to see your post on LinkedIn. And while I try to make evergreen content, I just couldn't believe that you were doing a shift at a hospital ER on Easter Sunday. But I think it goes into the type of person you are. And so let's talk about that. Why'd you decide to spend Easter Sunday at a hospital? Let's start there.
So good question. And yeah, the post you reference is really fresh. I mean, we're still in April. So I'm an ER nurse. That's my vocation. I've been a registered nurse since 1995. So 20 something plus years. And there was a very short time where I wasn't actively practicing as a nurse, but over the last few years, actually just pre-COVID, I dove back into the profession and I was working on Easter Sunday in an emergency department. Literally, I'm looking over out my window because it's about 200 meters from where I'm at. And I keep myself in the game. It's good to have that skill set just to 20 something years as an ER trauma nurse. It's hard to just let it go. You know what I mean? So yeah, I worked Easter Sunday.
And so it sounds like you're interested in keeping your technical skills sharp. You didn't want to get too far away from that. Is that fair?
It is. You know, we have skills as humans, whether it's technical or we've learned them or it's something we feel we're naturally good at. And I think it's part of our obligation if we desire to stay at the tip of our sphere, that we sharpen all those things. And so, yeah, I could not practice nursing, but I'm just like, I've done it for so long. I want to keep myself on the, you know what, Jerome, you never know. You never know when you're going to be downtown with your girl or downtown with your kids or at a game and somebody passes out. You never know. And I don't want to be in a position where I have this training and not know what to do. And so I keep it short.
Got it. So you came back to being a nurse. You said for a short period that you weren't a nurse. And so can you take us on the journey to the place where you built a company that you were able to exit?
Yeah, and I'm happy to. So what I'll do is, just to give a visual, what we'll do is I'll give you the 30,000 foot as if we're flying over the mountaintops. And then wherever you want to go into a peak or valley, I'm happy to. But I already shared that I'm a nurse, been one for several decades now. And back, so I graduated in 1995 and 97, I worked my butt off. I was happy. I was glad I was a college grad, glad to be out of the food service industry. Nothing wrong with it, but I was glad to basically take the next step in evolution. You know, a Hispanic kid, you know, gets a degree. And so I always wanted to be in healthcare. But a few years into it, I realized I was trapped. I was trapped by, I think your listeners, the folks here will understand this, the dollars for hours conundrum. I could only work so many hours, literally, and I was only going to be paid what an employer, a hospital practice decided to pay me. And I was making good money as a nurse. There's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with it at all. But I'm just like, I don't like that. I didn't like being in a box. And for some folks, it's okay. For me, it just didn't fit well. And I didn't know what to do about it. I started a company in the year 2000. And early 2001, I became self-employed. I contracted myself to a hospital direct and I doubled my salary. And so
you give me 30,000 foot view, but you said you contracted yourself to the hospital, double your salary.
Yeah.
Like overnight?
So no, that journey took a while. So remember, I was kind of as the staff nurse, here's what you're going to pay me. Here's what I can work. And I thought there's got to be a better way. So I went to what's called an agency. An agency provides supplemental staff to hospitals. And the agency exists in every industry. And so I thought an agency nurse was making $8 an hour more than me doing the same work right next to me. And I was intrigued. So I went to work for an agency. From there, I thought, okay, I'm still trapped. And so then I realized that I could become a travel nurse and make more money, but I was still trapped. I couldn't help the hours part, but I was able to activate the dollar part. And I thought, okay, what's next? And so I realized that there are nurses around the US who are unionized and they go on strike. What do they need? Strike breakers. I did a strike. I worked a strike and my hourly rate escalated even more. And then I thought, what more could there be? Now I've now contracted through an agency at a variety of hospitals around the country. And I thought, what if I became the contract body and contracted myself? And I didn't put a lot of thought into it, Jerome. It just, the moment that it happened was I was on a contract here in Central Texas at a hospital that became my first client. And this was in the year 2000 actually. And I was leaving the night shift and I was walking over the sky bridge to the parking garage and the director of nursing was coming in that morning and we were passing and she goes, "Hey, Rick." And I said, "Hey, man." And she said, "We want to renew your contract. We love having you here." And I said, "I'd love to stay here." I said, "I'm going to switch companies." And she said, "No problem." She said, "Have them send the contract over." And I kept walking knowing there was no company. There was, it just came out, Jerome. I got home and I was up. I just worked a 12-hour shift. I was up for hours trying to figure out what the hell did I just say, do, and what am I going to do about it? I went to Zoom. I mean, I went to LegalZoom.com and formed an LLC online. I had a friend who was an attorney. I said, "I think I need to help draw up a contract. Help me draw up a contract." I sent it to the hospital and they said, "No problem. Have the rep come by and we'll sign it." And I said, "This is the moment of truth, Rick. You are so deep, you can't back out. I'm the rep." And they said, "Signed." And my wage doubled. It doubled more than it had as a travel nurse, as a strike nurse. So remember, I had been escalated. I now made as much as a family practice physician. And I was like, what the heck did I just do? I became self-employed. So in a way, it happened overnight, but it was years in the making, if you will.
Yeah, I appreciate you drawing that out because I think most people only see the end result, right? They see the exit, they see the trophies, whether it's the car or the watch or whatever, but you were building a skill. First, you got great at the craft.
Right.
Then you figured out how to use your skill set to get compensated as well as you could on that dollars per hour basis. And then you said, "I got to break this." And so yeah. You moved over and you created an entity that allowed you to get paid at an even higher wage, but there was an opportunity, there was a mechanism for you to not only be tied to your hours. And so you formed an entity, you're the first person on the contract, and I assume that it grows from there, but I don't want to steal this thunder.
It did. And so I'll use words here on the show that I didn't know back then. How do I scale this? Now what? You know, now what? I was beginning to think, I think these are things that I read about people doing, but I didn't know what I was doing. I had no idea. I didn't know what I didn't know. So organically, it happened. And when I say it, here's what happened. They said, the hospital said, do you have any more nurses? Do you know more nurses? I'm like, that's all I know. And they said, do you think somebody can come fill in with you? So, because we need two nurses. I'm like, sure, my girlfriend. She's my wife now, 20 plus years. And she became my first employee. So I tell people we doubled in size overnight again. And doubled our revenues, doubled in size. And then, of course, the next iteration was, do you guys know more nurses? And between me and my girlfriend, we, of course, that's all we hung out with. And we became an agency of one, an agency of two, then four, then eight, then 16. And then it's like, well, if I can do this here, there's 16 hospitals in my region. What if we can go to this other hospital? What if we can go there? And now people knew who we were, the nurse, the community where everybody talks and they're like, hey, there's a bunch of nurses who are contracting and going into hospitals like HIT teams, and ended up contracting to one of the, I point out the window because literally one of our first big clients is the Christus Santa Rosa system. And they contracted us and we were able to place four nurses a day and then eight nurses a week. And over the course of many years, Jerome, the business model shifted, but we, at the time of the acquisition, we were 600 employees strong in 29 states, home office with about 30 to 40 internal staff manning our office day to day. And it was a ride. It's a ride, say the least.
No question. And so I remember hearing you on another podcast and you said that you got activated because I think you were in the reserves while you were going through this and you got activated. And
yes.
That was the point where you realized that you'd built something that wasn't solely reliant on you showing up every day. So can we talk about that and how you got to the place of building that? Because we talk about scaling all the time, but I think most people feel like the more valuable they are to the organization, the better they are. But I found in businesses that when you are valuable to the organization, the business isn't as valuable. And so,
yeah, the owner's the biggest choke point. The founder, the CEO is always the biggest, the bottleneck. It's a hard pill for CEOs and founders to swallow because they think they're the reason and they're not. They're the hurdle. And I never knew that until the day I had to know that. So nobody could have predicted 9/11. And I was a reserve Army nurse. Actually, I wasn't then. 9/11 happened and being prior service, having served in the late 80s, early 90s, I thought I can give my skill back to our country. And so I went back and I rose my hand and was sworn in as an officer and as an Army nurse and knowing and hoping I was going to be deployed. I was going to go to the sandbox. And so I was activated within a year of my swearing back in as an Army nurse. I got my orders and didn't go to Iraq. Afghanistan wasn't on the war radar then. I've been training all my 20 years, well, 15 years at whatever at that point. And I thought this is the big show for me. This is it. My hat was in the ring, but the military didn't send me downrange. They sent me to Washington, D.C. for a pretty lengthy activation or tour. It's a tour. I was activated to serve under the Global War on Terror. So I went to Washington and worked at Walter Reed. When I first got there, Jerome, it was the biggest disappointment of my life because I thought I've trained to be on the battlefield. I trained to be right there when our troops are at their worst. And I went to Washington to the U.S. Army's flagship hospital. And I thought, Lord, I don't know why you're sending me here. Maybe Uncle Sam made a mistake, but following the path. The reason why that's important is because by the time I was activated, the company had gone from private staffing into federal staffing. So we had then at that point transitioned our entire operation to serving the federal government. So we were at that point when I was activated, our clients were military hospitals, naval institutions, bases, the VA. So we no longer worked with our initial clients, the hospitals that contracted me. We worked in the federal sector, 100%. That was a problem because as the CEO and sole shareholder of a company who worked, had some pretty large contracts with the federal government, I was now a federal employee as an Army officer. And so who would have known, right? So I had a choice, and the choice base, I could not re-service. That was not an option. The option was get rid of the company or sign power of attorney. So we hired a CEO, I signed power of attorney, and my wife, who was an operational savant, basically ran the stuff during my activation. So I had to sign over power of attorney. And the lesson I took was the whole bottleneck thing, because the company exploded. We were already fast growth. During my absence, because I could not participate in the running of the company just, we won more contracts, we grew. And of course, 9/11 had a lot to do with it, with deployment tempos, but we exploded. The company just grew massively, hockey stick at that point. And I realized the lesson I learned then that I understand clear as day today was I was the bottleneck. The CEO is the bottleneck. Get out of the way, get good people and get good butts and seats and get the fuck out of the way. And I would never have learned that if I had never raised my hand, if I had never become an Army nurse. Everything was happening for reasons that are well beyond me, Jerome. But again, I was on the path. If this is where you want me, this is what I'll do. That I have to give a power of attorney, that's what I'll do. And I guess I learned maybe the hard way that don't fight it. Sometimes you got to roll with it. So that's what happened. Walter Reed, power of attorney, company grew. I realized, holy cow, I need to not go back. And that was another whole other story when my tour ended.
Okay. And so I want to thank you for your service. And I've heard a little bit of this snippet, but I really want to dive in here. And so what did you find? Because you said you were disappointed that you ended up in Washington. You didn't go to the sandbox. But what did you find when you actually walked through the halls of Walter Reed? Did you find out that you were probably in a better place than you would have been if you weren't?
Saved my life, Jerome. I got to Walter Reed and did all of my in processing. And when I was active duty in the 80s, 90s, I was enlisted. I was a private first class. And I went in as an E-nothing and left as an E-4. And this time was different. Now I wore a bar on my collar. And so it was a little different. It felt different. And in process, I thought I'll for sure going to work in the emergency department. Walter Reed at that time was the old Walter Reed. It was in the district in Washington. And it was in a very, let's just say, bad part. So, and it was at the time where the gates weren't necessarily closed the way they were today. I thought, well, I'll go to the ER. I'm going to be an ER nurse at Walter Reed. And no, they sent me to a ward, which is a floor. The civilian sector calls them floors or units. The military call them wards. Went to a ward, and it was a general medical surgical ward. And I'm like, you got to be shitting me. I'm going back to nursing 101, my very first job. Basically, every nurse's first job is med-surg. I thought, this can't be happening. I'm experienced, and they're sending me to a basic general, drive on, Rick, drive on. Got to put the uniform on, get the haircut, drive on. Got to my first day after in-processing on the ward, met my COs, met a lot of the other staff nurses, civilians, and otherwise. Plot twist here. It was ironic because some of the civilian nurses were employees of my company. So they didn't know who I was. I was there as an Army officer, but it was a bit interesting time. But Jerome, I get there and get my first patient assignment and knock on the patient's door, walk in the room, and I stop cold in my tracks. Even now, as I'm saying this, I'm getting chills down my entire body. I looked and there was a young man, trying to get out of his bed because he thought I was an officer, didn't know I was his nurse. And I said, don't get up. And I kind of stuttered and I looked and he was missing an eye. One of his ears was gone, no leg. One leg was gone. And he looked like he had been through war. Literally, he'd been blown up. And his mom was on the other side of the bed and she had been with him since he got to Walter Reed. He was a casualty of war. He had been in an IED accident. And at that moment, I realized this is why I'm here. I still don't grasp it, but this is why I'm here. I'm here to take care of these heroes at this point in their life. They've already been blown up somewhere in the desert. They've been evacuated, probably had emergency surgery in a cache or a forward surgical team. They've gone through Germany. Now they're at America's fucking flagship. And I have the privilege, I have the honor of being their nurse, taking care of them while they become Americans back on our soil again. And that was 1.5 years, day in and day out, knocking on doors, opening up, no legs, missing arms, missing ears, traumatic head injuries, traumatic brain injuries. day after day. And I realized that this was the most profound, to this day, that tour, those patients, that was my most profound time as a nurse in my life. I got to take care of our heroes every single day. Watch them go from, I have no legs, my life is done, to getting prosthetics and walking out of that hospital, proud as fuck to have done what they did. And it's best job I ever had. 1.5 years, I thought, God, thank you. Thank you for knowing the path and for not allowing me to get my ego in the way, anger in the way, and for saying, this is where you belong, Rick. Beautiful job. I had the most wonderful job, tour of duty, patients ever.
Thank you for your service.
Appreciate that.
Okay. So the business is growing. You're doing your life's work. You're working in your passion. You're serving at a level that you probably didn't get to serve on a regular basis beforehand. And then it's over and you go back to headquarters, HQ. I mean, you had a direct line to the person running it, but now you're back home at HQ. What do you think then? What happened?
So at that time, I think I was fully understanding and grasping the fact that I was an entrepreneur, that we had started a company, that it was on a fast growth trajectory. The CEO we brought in was actually prior from a publicly traded company. And so she helped me understand a lot of the things that I had no idea I was supposed to know. So my learning curve was pretty steep. And what I also realized was it would be detrimental to the business if I tried to get back into it after being removed from that long. There was no reason for me. So we opened up CrossFit gyms. I found and fell in love with CrossFit. And so we founded not the first, but some of the first CrossFit gyms here in our city back in 2007. And I ran those. I became a trainer, a coach. I went to the company, our company once a week, and I had sit down with our staff and with the CEO. And of course, my wife is really the glue that held it all together. And then I'd go run the gyms. And for several years, that's all we did. The beauty of our CrossFit gyms was we were also the first and probably the world, I'll just say that, to actually work with amputees. We put together the first programs for amputees. The reason is because a lot of people may have not remember, but at that time, Fort Sam Houston, which is the San Antonio Military Medical Center, built the first, it's called Center for the Intrepid. They built it after 9/11, and it was to rehabilitate all of our amputees. So literally San Antonio became the hub for all the thousands of troops who were losing limbs, and they needed a place to work out. And we tailored programs for amputees at our CrossFit gyms and did that for a while. Stayed out of the company, did it for a while, and that's how I kept my meddling self out of messing up a good thing, if you will.
So let me get this right. You still own 100% of the nursing company?
At that time, yes.
And you weren't going there every day?
No.
You pick up a new thing and you're working on that, but I think you're still getting paid from the other thing. Am I wrong about that?
No, you're not. I drew a salary as the CEO. I drew a salary.
That's amazing. Okay. So I just want people to get that because I just want to hammer this point of decoupling time for money because I think it's so, so, so valuable. Okay. Truly becoming an owner. I think most people believe that they go from being an employee to being self-employed and that's the holy grail. But when you actually build a business, you can manage a person managing your business and actually get time freedom and still get real income. So this is interesting, Rick, because I think this is where I really dove in with you. I think a lot of people are chasing financial freedom. I think it's the wrong F though. I think they're looking for fulfillment. And so I guess the first question is, do you agree with that? Because to exit a business and to have multiple businesses started that were paying you income, I suspect that you found financial freedom. Is that the holy grail or is fulfillment on the other side of that and the thing that we're all truly seeking?
That's a great observation, a great point, and an even greater question, Jerome, because I don't have a growing up sob story. I'm Hispanic 100% from Los Angeles. That's where I was born. My family is from East Los Angeles, which is basically the shithole at that time of that's where all the gangbangers lived. And my family had some legit gangbangers. And my parents promptly, when my dad came back from Vietnam, moved us out of East LA. We lived in California. That's where I call today home. I've been a Texan for decades, but the reason why I shared that is because I saw my parents working, hustling, driving, and I had a pretty good life. I can't complain. People say you're a product of your environment. Oh, I grew up in a really shitty part of the US. And I don't believe that you're a product. I believe you're a product of your decisions. So I watched my parents hustle and drive and they're successful. But where I'm going with that is I believed in the ethic of putting in the work, putting in the hours. But I also believed in what I began to learn of smarter, not harder. And all those lessons learned, I began to believe for a while that financial freedom was the be all end all, that the fat bank account, and you alluded to something earlier, watches and cars, and not in a bad or grandiose way, so I thought, but in a way that maybe this is how you know when you've made it, when you have the stuff, the things. And if you had asked me then, I would have probably have leaned more towards, you know, people want a nice big house and the garage, and they want to be able to park, you know, a German engineered sports car in it, and you know, be able to put down the card and get the watch. And there was a part of me that leaned into it. It was to my detriment, I later learned. But today, if you ask me that, absolutely not. I agree with you 100%. It's freedom is the F word we should be seeking, and freedom from location, freedom from dependence, freedom from. And when we realize what I believe, I think you're pulling this thread, is when we don't base our freedom on money, then everything shifts because the money follows. The money, what I've learned today is the money is out there in abundance. It's out there. It comes in waves and it comes and it goes. It's just a matter of putting ourselves in the right place for the right reasons at the right time. And I could probably go on about this. You know, I sent an email out this morning, Jerome, like an hour before our call, because I usually email my list. And it's crazy how we're talking about this, because I write books for folks and I've been inundated with folks scheduling calls on successful entrepreneurs. And when they hear my price, they don't balk. They don't think twice about it. And I'm thinking there's an entire sect of humanity out there right now who is deathly afraid of what's going on in the country. And I'm like, there are so many people who are making money, creating wealth and happiness. And I'm just like, who are you going to listen to? CNN or whatever, Fox, whatever. The news, the talking heads, or the people who were out there grinding. So long story short, I believe, and I would say if we chase money, we're chasing the wrong thing. It's the wrong thing.
A lot of people want to unlock their ultimate potential, but lack the strategy, support, and stamina necessary to achieve their major goals. They often try to overcome these challenges by trying to do it on their own, causing frustration, fatigue, and eventually failure. We have developed a model for a center life, aka the red pill, to help them bolster their beliefs, gain clarity on their path to success, and provide accountability as they take action on their goals. When they take the red pill, they rapidly accelerate attainment of their goals and begin to experience a life of significance and impact. Want to find out more? Hop over to JeromeMyers.co. Now, let's get back to the episode. Yeah. And so my follow up on that is the check doesn't scratch the itch. Like once the check or the wire hits, does anything really change?
Yeah. Oh my God. So I had a dream car when I was a kid. I didn't have pictures of girls on my walls. I had a 911 Turbo, old school. I loved them. I love Porsches. My first car, my dad gave me an old Porsche. It was beat up. It was old, but I'm just like, oh my God, this is what a German sports car looks like. And so one of my dreams was when I make it, quote unquote, for somebody who can't see the air quotes, I'm going to buy a convertible 911 Turbo Porsche. That will be my sign. And that day came. I happened to be driving home one day after the company was thriving and I was back from my tour, and I drove by I had to turn on the highway. I always drove by where the Porsche dealer was, and there was a yellow 911 Turbo convertible on the lot. Where I'm going with it is that I ended up purchasing it. This was 12 years ago now, as of this recording.
Congratulations. You should have your car.
You know, it wasn't symbolic of look at me. It was a reward because this was a reward for me. And I remember after the acquisition of the company and when it was all, everything was signed, I had an earnout and I got my first check and I sat there and it was a gloomy day and I sat there. I was all excited, stoked. You know, I had the check in my hand and I go, I can't believe this shit. I said, look at me, you know, beat my chest. Look at this dude. You know what I mean? Who's a Mexican now? Yo, you know what I mean? Now, honestly, Jerome, I kid you not. Yeah, I'm on top of the world. Here's the thing about that. Nobody knew. Nobody understood. Right. Unless you're an entrepreneur, somebody who's been in the dirt, you don't get that. And you can't share that with just like, no, nothing against anybody out there. You can't share that with average folks. I pulled my car up and it was still an idle, waiting for the drizzle to die down to the bank. And the bank knew who we were. And I'm like, they even know who I am. You know, I mean, I'm sharing that with you, not just as a point of ego just got the better of me for a while. And I opened up that check to look at it. And it's a big check. The first of many. I'll tell you, it was $500,000 check. And the first of many to come. And I thought, I've never held this much in my hand. And this is going to go, this is like mine. This is, and as I'm doing this and I'm holding it in my fingers and looking at it, I look up and I started crying. I haven't shared this story very much. This has been personal to me because when I was doing that and at mentally beating my chest, I realized this can't be it. And then I thought, is this it? Is this all? Is what I've worked for this piece of paper? And it was the beginning of a very distinct part of my life. It changed me. When I believed it was the pinnacle, what I realized was, while it could have been, for the outsider looking at it, it's a pinnacle that people want to get to. But I felt so alone. I felt things I'd never felt before. And I deposited the check, just to be clear. I didn't go tear it up and become a monk. But I realized that something had shifted. And I didn't know what had shifted in me, but something had changed. And it was the next phase of my life.
Yeah, we call it the founder's exit paradox. It's like, I should have all of the things, right? I basically hit the lottery. I can go do whatever I want with whoever I want, whenever I want. But there's still this sadness. There's still this almost remorse, this loss. But you can't go talk to anybody about it.
Right.
Because they won't get it. Mm-hmm. Right. And you feel bad because you should be grateful you hit the goal, but it's just always there's this dip on the other side. And so my guess is nobody was there telling you that was going to happen.
No, nobody was. I mean, my family, I had family, and I think even to this day they didn't grasp what had transpired and the transition. My family, my parents live here in San Antonio, and I see them all. You know, my dad's out there golfing with my brother-in-law today, and so we're all close. But even them, I couldn't. You're right. I didn't know that there was nobody there until I realized there was nobody there. Of course, my wife, and it led me to explore and really understand that there are groups like Entrepreneurs Organization, like YPO, like Vistage, like there are these affinity groups and masterminds of folks who have come together and I'm sure you understand that concept, but I didn't know that. I was extremely lonely and I didn't know what I was supposed to do. I didn't know. I was in uncharted territory and I felt literally alone.
Yeah. It's interesting, the groups that you mentioned, because I think the majority of them really focus on helping people get to the point, but the focus is really on the entity and tinkering with the business and figuring out how to extract more value from the business. And what we're really focused on is the person. Like I believe there's a whole person behind the business. Like the founder, you get the check and then it's like, you start asking a bunch of questions. Like, well, these new people show up. Well, are they just here because I exited, or are they here because they want something from me? Or are they really excited to be because of who I am and the work that I put in, and they truly understand the sacrifices that were made? And it's a really uncomfortable space. And if you don't have somebody walking with you on that journey, I just think you end up in a place where you don't know what to do. And that's what we're working on here, is helping people get that the goal is worthy, but you're going to ask those three questions on the backside of it. Is this really it? What was it all really for? And what now? You didn't say that, but I'm sure that was the next question of what now? And because you said my life pivoted, I had a change. And so what happened when you made that change on the other side? Like, what'd you realize? And then what'd you go do?
You said two words that I've never heard anybody say besides my wife and I, and that's life pivot. So I didn't know what to do. I knew that everything I had done now at that point for many years had to do with entrepreneurship, with startups, with something in that space. I was fully engrossed in that world, if you will. And I formed a corporate entity called Life Pivot LLC. And I said, I don't know what it's going to be, what it's going to do, but I know that I may be doing some freelance work. I'll maybe do some consulting and I want to be paid through the corporation. I don't want to be paid. My mantra then was from this point on, never a W-2. And whether it's good or bad. And so I formed a corporation called Life Pivot LLC. Even to this day, I have a client, I have clients I work with and they get an invoice from Life Pivot because my life pivoted. And I didn't know what to do, where to go, bad decisions, good decisions, things that may sound fun. Like we angel invested in some startups and some were just god awful, just losers from the, I didn't know that then, but still life pivoted and trying to figure out what was next and asking those questions. And I just totally drew a blank on what you asked me, Jerome.
Well, so what happened? You made the pivot. What'd you pivot into? Because you got to answer the what now question. Everybody's got to answer the what now question.
I didn't know what my identity had been tied with the military. I was now out. I was done with my service. I was totally out. My identity had now been, I was now known as the guy who formed this company, the CEO. And no, I was no longer, we had closed our gyms at some point. They just small profit. For me, it wasn't worth the effort.
It was hard work.
It wasn't worth that trade-off. And so I literally wasn't doing anything. And the what now was, this is where I took time off. I didn't nurse for a long time. Maybe a shift here and there just to keep my finger in the water. My wife and I traveled, went to Europe, did some things. I didn't do anything. I was really trying to figure it out and made some mistakes. Nothing like marriage related, nothing like that, just to be clear. No, my wife has been my girl for over 20 years, but just things that I try not to reflect back on, but they were lessons learned. And I was still active in CrossFit and I was still active in competitions and I was lost and floundering mentally and spiritually. I was lost and floundering and not knowing and had a nice vehicle. We had a nice house. Our kids are healthy. Life is good, but still not sure. And I was an active competitor and I was at a competition in Austin, Texas, and it was outside and the sky was like it is today, blue and perfect. And I had an accident and the accident crushed my leg. It was a freak accident with the barbell. I'm glossing over it, but I was spiritually and emotionally at a place where I was just empty. And I didn't know that. I just knew something was missing. And I thought powering through was the way. So active competition, sports and CrossFit and triathlon was my way to power through and to show up and be the guy still and be somebody. You know what I mean? And I didn't want to be the nurse. But I didn't know who I was supposed to be, Jerome. And it was a freak accident. I was a trainer. I was active. I've been trained by some of the best CrossFit athletes, even Coach himself. I'm coached by the founder in 2007. He was my trainer, mine, when he was still the athlete in his business. Freak accident crushed my leg. And as a trauma nurse, and I'm laying on the ground, it happened so fast. Even the judges, it was an Olympic lift. They thought I had just fallen down. And I thought, I can't get up. And it happened in split seconds. But I remember lifting my head up and looking because I was laid out flat. And I thought, I looked at my right leg and I'm like, that's not good. It just looked mangled, but it was. And so I laid back and I was looking straight up at the sky and I don't know. And God spoke to me. I'm not trying to be coy or anything, but I looked back and I said, I'm thinking this and I'm feeling this. This is what you've been trying to tell me, that it's not about me. And as that moment and that thought, and I'm looking straight up at this beautiful sky, I said, thank you for just making it a leg and not my life, not somebody I love, and then the pain just washed over me. And after rehab, 7-8 months, major surgery, not being able to walk, I was baptized. Got baptized in my backyard. And that became the second biggest life pivot for me.
So, I mean, what you just described for the audience is an existential crisis. Sometimes we call it an exit crisis because existential is hard to spell, but it's the redefining of who you are and what you are and what you're going to do. And I'm glad you were doing things in a healthy way. And I think you alluded to some of the ways you were talking about, like nothing marital. Like some people blow everything up, right?
Yeah.
They blow all the money. They ruin all the relationships around them just because they don't know who they are or what they're supposed to be doing. And it sounds like you found a place to pour that in. You got to think, if you build something that big and then you don't have any place to place that effort, it starts to, it's almost like a nuclear power plant. Like it starts to eat itself until you can find some place to place that energy and that attention. And man, I just appreciate that. The other thing that I thought was really cool is, and I may be wrong here, but you probably got that calling before, right? Before you're laying flat with the pain, you probably were knew that you should be doing something different. It wasn't about you, that there was more to this. And I say, usually there's a whisper and then it's the inside voice and then maybe it yells at you. And then you get hit in the face with the 2x4, but you hurt your leg lifting weights, but it's going to get your attention eventually. And we get to decide at what decibel we hear or feel the thing. And it sounds like you went all the way through because you were just fighting and pushing through. And I mean, unfortunately, as alpha men or alphas in general, that's what we're taught to do.
Yeah.
Just keep going. And we don't talk about how we feel or what we're feeling. And that feeling of emptiness is a really dark and scary place to be. And if nobody's there with you, who knows how that works out? We've seen it work out in some really bad ways. And so these are the secrets that nobody wants to talk about when it comes to the exit paradox. They only want to talk about the money and the Porsches or the things that end in I from Italy that cost a whole lot of money to insure and fix, and you can only drive it 250 miles a month or whatever. Like it's all of that, right? And it's just such a good job of explaining that. So I appreciate you being so vulnerable, because I think there's a whole lot of people who would be scared to share those things, but I think it's absolutely going to help people. And so you get baptized, and then what?
Yeah, honestly, I still didn't know what I was supposed to do, but at least I felt like a part of me was being filled up. And that's the only way I can explain it. I did join some affinity groups. One of them was called C12, and this is Christian Business Owners. I did have a couple projects in the works. I started to write one of my first books at that time with a ghostwriter, and fell back in love with writing, which was one of my first passions as a kid, and started to think about what I was going to do next, but in a more fulfilled way, if you will. And it's hard to explain, but I felt like a part of me was now being filled back up. I didn't realize it was empty, and got back into nursing. And not that I was ever out of it, but I had been removed from it, and started to take, honestly, a little bit more pride in the fact that I'm a nurse, that I have a skill and I can help people and take care of people and share that with people, and did some contract work. And over the course of a few years, I started doing some coaching. So this was another part of while I was building the company, is I became a trained business coach for EO. I was one of their facilitators. So I took my facilitation training and worked with young startups. And so I became a paid coach, and I liked it, but I realized that wasn't what fired me up. It paid some money, which was fine, but it wasn't going to be my next thing. So I tried a few things, basically, what I was saying. Did some one-on-one personal training, still didn't fulfill me the way I needed it to. I dove back into my writing, Jerome, is what I did, which is I realized that was my truest passion from 12 years old, is writing. And I just wrote for myself, wrote some poetry, wrote some creative nonfiction, published it places like medium.com. And then over the course of a few years is then COVID emerged and everything changed. So whole different story, but I still was affiliated with the government because of the company I had and the people we knew. And when COVID struck, as soon as the world locked down, they sent me to Europe, and I spent the entire COVID in one of the most beautiful countries in the world, working for Uncle Sam again. But the reason why I shared that is because I was so isolated as to where they sent me, is that I dove back into my writing and started ghostwriting for clients. Because now entrepreneurs couldn't have martini lunches. They couldn't do handshake deals anymore. They had to do everything on social media or electronically. And so many of them who knew me said, "Hey, Rich, I need somebody to help with my newsletters, with my emails." And I said, "Okay, what do you have now?" They said, "Nothing." I said, "You have no way to communicate with people." And, "Nope." So I helped them. I dove back into my writing, and I became a ghostwriter for a lot of CEOs and their companies. And that cascaded to what I do today. And that's I write books for them.
So Do you think if you had someone to help you with the process of finding your next thing, that that would have been valuable?
Yeah, I do. It would. The shared experience. So yes, the short answer, what I realized today is by all means, having a group of like-minded folks, whether it's a mastermind group, whether it's just a coach, but somebody who has been to the place, experienced the things, and can share in a non-provocative way. Like, in other words, entrepreneurs don't like being told what to do. But if you tell them in a way that it's wrapped in a story or in my experience, suddenly the smart ones will listen to the wisdom. I never had that. So it would have helped. Would I have made less mistakes and had a different journey? Maybe, but this is still my journey. This is
I only asked the question because I know some of the listeners are out there, and there are certainly people out there who have to touch a stove to see if it's hot.
Yep.
Right. But there's a lot of people who are like, man, I don't know if I'm as strong as Rick. I don't know if I could go down in that bottom and come back out myself or do it without ruining the relationships that I love the most or care about the most. And so, or making mistakes. And I mean, even you said there's some things that happen that you don't want to talk about. You don't want to remember those things. And so if we can avoid those and get to the place where we're making that impact and helping other people, I think there's just so much value there. And we can skip some of the things that we want to edit out. And so I just want them to hear from somebody who's already there that there is some real value in having somebody along with you. And so with that said, it seems like you joined some organizations, you did some coaching. Do you consistently have somebody that's helping you with your next phase of life now? Are you kind of a lone wolf going it on your own? Like, what did you make that a permanent part of your life?
So no, I'm no longer the lone wolf type. I mean, intuitively, that's who I am. I'm by nature a loner. I'm an introvert. So I realized that introverted activities are where I'm most fired up. I got to share with you, my dad's out golfing right now. My family's in town and they said, come golfing. I'm like, I don't want to golf. I don't want to be on a course. I love the guys. It's my dad. It's my brother-in-law, my two brother-in-laws actually. And I don't want to golf. You know, I'd rather be here on a podcast. And when we're done here, I'm going to do some writing for a while. That's what fires me up. But so that part of me is still the lone wolf. But to answer the bigger question is absolutely, I'm not alone in what I do. I have people, good friends of mine who have been to the same abysses that I've been through, who I bounce ideas. We do. Think of a friend today, every quarter, he lives up in Austin, him and his wife and my wife, we get together and hang out and go do to the wine tours, and the girls talk about girl stuff, and him and I sit there and talk about life and business, and what do you think about this? And I know I'm going to get the no shitter response of somebody who's been there. So long answer, but no, I absolutely don't do it alone. I was in Chicago with another friend. He's actually a client, but he's a high level business coach, and being able to be there, and even though it was about him, have him answer some questions for me, I would not recommend somebody try and do this alone. It's not the way to go.
I find it to be the most inefficient, ineffective way to do it. But, you know, some people are hard-headed. So, Rick, I've got two more questions for you before we wrap this bad boy up. And the first one is, who else should we have on the show, man? I want to talk to more people just like you. And if we shout them out on the show, then I know they're going to come on because of your recommendation.
I got actually a couple. As we were talking, I've got a couple. Scott and Dan. And because as we're talking, I'm thinking to myself, I need to make them aware of your show. And your questioning was really, it wasn't surfacey, like you said. I liked it. You're making me think and actually share things, and nothing wrong with that. But they've got great stories, entrepreneurship journeys. And so Scott and Dan, those are two fellas.
Okay. Scott and Dan, we're going to have you on, and we're going to make this, we're going to get the story out there because it's going to inspire and help so many other people. The final question I have for you, Rick, and it's the one I like to ask everybody that comes on the show, because we go for, you know, 55 minutes, an hour, and there's a lot of ground that we covered. And this is one I think people are going to listen to over and over again. And I suspect they've got a few pages of notes at this point. The question I like to wrap up with is, if they didn't hear anything else, what's the one thing you want them to take away from the episode?
The good one. The one thing. You mentioned financial freedom, and I will agree it's something we all want. I would say take the first word out. Find the freedoms that are going to fulfill your life. whether it's location freedom, whether it's the freedom, whatever that freedom is, and fulfill it with the thing that's going to provide you the biggest happiness, not just you, but also going to be able to someday provide for the greater good. In other words, find the freedom that's going to fulfill you, be relentless about it. And when you get there, share it with the world. Whatever that means to you, don't let it be just solely about you.
Not about you, man. Rick, this is a phenomenal episode, my brother. Thank you so much for sharing with us in a vulnerable way and not holding back, because I think there's so many folks who can benefit from the experience that you had. And it's so cool to see somebody do mission work. I don't think many people understand what mission work is, but you're certainly on purpose, in purpose, and you're 1,000% a dream catcher. I'm so glad you got your 911 Porsche. That just makes my heart do flips. So to the listeners, if you want somebody to help guide you on the journey and get some of that help that Rick would have appreciated, then you should reach out and tell the next episode. Your dreams should be real. Talk soon.
Thank you for joining the tribe today. We would love to hear from you. Please don't forget to rate, like, and share. Perhaps someone you know could benefit from what we've discussed. Until the next time, remember that your dreams should be real.